Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. We have Dave Mularkey coming up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Mularkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mularkey.
Well, hello there. Welcome. Good afternoon on a really a gloomy day, a dreary day. But hey, it's late January, folks. Just think of what we could be getting this time of year. You know, sub-zero temperatures, single digits, a lot of snow, nothing. Well, we've got nothing like that, and it doesn't look like we're going to have it this week either. And by the end of the week, it'll be February. Hip, hip, hooray. So don't complain about a gloomy, dreary day. I know that's all we're looking at here, but it could be a heck of a lot worse. And besides, it's a book talk day today, so we get to talk about a book. You know, we do this every month, kind of like Oprah's book club used to be. I don't know. Does Oprah still have a book club? I'm not sure. I don't even know whether she has a show anymore or not. But anyway, we've done this for many, many years in cooperation with the library system of Butler County. And all the various public libraries take turns selecting a book. And then a representative comes in when it's their turn, and we talk about the book. This month, it is the turn of the Slippery Rock Community Library. Karen Pierce is the director there, and she's with us here in the studio. Karen, good to see you again.
It is great to be back here.
Last time we chatted was in April of last year. I had to look that up. I can't believe it was that long ago.
Wow. I wouldn't have guessed that. Oh, no. You know what? That was the last time we did book talk, but you and I have talked since then because we talked about RockCon.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's right. That was in the fall.
Well, the book we talked about last spring was Dead Girl Running by Christina Dodd. And this month you have selected for discussion a psychological thriller. The title is Sometimes I Lie by Alice Feeney. As is often the case with book top selections by library directors, I had not heard of Alice Feeney before. Well, this was her debut novel, I think, right?
I believe so. And she's got some other ones after this now.
Mm-hmm. She's an interesting person. We'll talk a little bit about her a little bit later, but talk about the book first of all. Sometimes I Lie. Psychological thriller. Yes,
yes.
The way you would characterize it?
Yeah, I think that fits that genre. This book fits that genre just right.
You can kind of guess from the title that this is another one of those books with what they now call unreliable narrator. Sometimes I Lie might give you that suggestion. I have to be honest with you straight away. I'm not a fan of these unreliable narrator books. I've read a couple of them for book talk over the past several years. The first one that I remember was Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn. Is that who wrote that?
Yes.
Extremely popular, I know. You know, the people ate it up. And then there was one after that called The Girl on a Train, which should have been The Woman on the Train. It wasn't a girl. But likewise, my problem with unreliable narrators is twofold. You know, I like a good thriller, but I never had an unreliable narrator in the past until recently. And number two, you know, when you invest several hours in reading a book, you know, in this case, it was kind of slow reading for me, you know, 6 or 8 hours, and then you find out at the end, well, maybe it happened and maybe it didn't, and that kind of bugs me. You know, I feel like I wasted my time.
Well, I always try to figure out who did it. You know, so where in this there's some mysteries going on, and you're always trying to figure it out, and then you realize at the end, okay, I need to go back and actually see what were the red herrings and what weren't red herrings, but you thought might be, you know, because it surprises you at the end.
Well, if you can figure out who's who in this book, then you're a better man than I, Gunga Din, because I got to be honest with you, I was so confused. Even when I got to the end, I didn't know what was going on. My kind of a thriller or mystery is Agatha Christie, you know, where a lot of red herrings, is a lot of fun, but when you get to the end, you know, Agatha Christie figures it out, or Sherlock Holmes, back when I was a kid reading Sherlock Holmes, he figures it out. A book like this, it just, I don't know, it more frustrates me than anything else.
Well, I almost felt like a lot of these books nowadays are written so that they can be turned into movies. And I think that...
Is this one going to be? Do you know?
I don't know. But it would make an interesting movie.
Well, it would make a confusing one, that's for sure. Let's talk about the characters, at least as I started to write them down in my notes. And I've got to be honest with you, I gave up keeping notes after a while because even with my notes, I couldn't keep it straight who was who. The central character, I think we would agree, is Amber Reynolds, right?
Correct.
Who is, at least I think, the narrator of this whole story.
Yes.
And it opens up. She is in a hospital in a coma. She's paralyzed, but the trick is, the narrative conceit is, that she can hear and understand what's going on in the room, even though she's in a coma and nobody thinks that she can hear.
Which they've said is true about a lot of people in comas, you mm-hmm. know, that they can hear, they just can't communicate back to you. And you get to see it from her point of view.
Well, that's an interesting, tack to take. I can buy that, and I did, you know. It makes sense, and various people visit her. She, when she wakes up, not comes out of the coma, but when she is able to hear and think at least a little bit, she's trying to figure out why she's there. She has no idea. She has no memory of it.
Right. She has also lost her memory. So she's trying to sift through what is reality and what's made up in her mind. And, she thinks she has memories of certain things going on, but she doesn't understand why she's remembering them. And as the book travels along, it's a little confusing because, A, she's not sure that her memories are real. And then it's also bouncing back. So you're reading about the current event. She's laying in bed. She's just becoming aware of the fact that she's in a coma. But then it's darting back to two different time periods. One, when she's a child, and then two, when, like, the week before all this started. She's trying to go back and re-piece her memories.
The chapter headings, in fact, are now, then, and before.
Yeah.
So now is, you know, she's in this coma, she can hear, but nobody thinks she can. Before is before the accident. And then when she was a kid in elementary school. By the way, the setting for this is in London, England, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is Alice Feeney lives there. She was a broadcaster for the British Broadcasting Corporation for quite a few years, I guess.
Well, one of the characters in the book is a journalist on the radio. Are they also TV or just radio?
Well, radio, the other main character that you're thinking about, Madeline. But Amber Reynolds herself is a talk show. She's like second banana on this radio talk show.
That's true.
Now, when I first read it, because it was in London, I thought it was with the BBC. But then you find out later it's with a smaller regional radio station. She hopes that she might someday make it to, you know, a national network like the BBC. but I'm talking about Amber now, Amber Reynolds. She actually worked in television for a while before that. She was a spot TV news reporter, you know, did stand-up from news stories. But she's been in this radio job for a while. However, when we get to the first flashback, the one that took place a week or so before this accident, she was in danger of losing her job. Do you remember that part?
I do. And there's there's Madeline, who is the main star of the show, and then their producer, Matthew. And Matthew's kind of on her side, but Madeline definitely, I guess, has the final say-so or whatever. And so,
Madeline Frost, she's like the queen bee.
Diva.
Yeah.
And so Matthew has pulled Amber aside and said, "Hey, I don't know how to tell you this, but your job's in danger." And so that ends up being part of the mystery that's going on. There's a big, she's figuring out ways to save her job.
Just because Madeline doesn't like her.
Right.
I mean, she apparently is doing her job just fine, but Madeline doesn't like her. So that's it. And as I recall, this is early in the book, but the producer, Matthew's his name, yeah. He says, you know, try to be nice to her. Try to make her like you. And then, because this will be your last chance. If it doesn't work, you know, you've got a week. And then, you know, I'm going to have no choice because we're not going to fire her. She's the queen bee. The program is called Coffee Morning. And it's a radio talk show that's on, obviously, early in the morning. So, okay, we get that background. And then it jumps back and forth every few pages.
Yes, it takes a lot to keep track of
it. Confusing enough. But then she's back in the hospital bed. And then the next thing you know, she's back in elementary school. She's like 9 or 10 years old.
Yes, you know, you're reading entries from diary. And it talks about being the new kid in school and making friends with another little girl that's in the school that is not part of the popular crowd.
Mm-hmm. And she says, "Call me Taylor."
Yes, yeah. And they end up, you know, sort of sticking together and palling around for a year or so. You know, while you're reading these flashbacks.
Amber Reynolds, who is the, I would call the central character, obviously she's the one that's in the coma, she's married to Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything about Paul?
He is a novelist, mm-hmm. And he's written one successful novel, and then he kind of went through, he's going through a dry period right now, and it was just, it's bothering him, and so they're having some problems in their marriage, and they're having some... Just general discontent, I'll say it that way.
Mm-hmm. And then there's somebody else. There's Amber's sister, Claire.
Mm-hmm. And
who turns out to be an extremely major character, although it didn't appear to be in the beginning.
True. And they share a birthday.
We think. This is what drives me nuts because, you know, you read all this and then you get a couple of chapters later and, well, maybe this isn't true. And then you get to the end and I don't, honestly, could you figure out what happened when you got to the end of this novel? I could not. And I tried my very best. I had no idea what happened.
At the very end, when I read, you know, the surprise part, I thought, oh my goodness. Oh, like all of a sudden light bulbs were flashing all over. And I was like, of course that's how it happened, you know? And I thought, I don't want to go back and reread it. But if I went back and reread it, I thought I might enjoy it a whole lot more because at least you have an idea of what the heck is going on. The first, I don't know, 100 pages or so, you're reading it and you're thinking, huh. Okay.
Well, take a break. We'll continue our discussion of, again, the title of the book, Sometimes I Lie. It's a novel by Alice Feeney. We want to talk about a little bit about Alice as well. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR, Monday edition. We'll take a break and be back to talk more with our guest, Karen Pierce, right after these words.
ARMCO Credit Union has one sweetheart of a loan rate waiting for you. Hi, I'm Kurt Heekins, loan manager at ARMCO Credit Union. And whether you're thinking of buying a vehicle or refinancing a loan from another financial institution, now is the time to take advantage of our low, low rates. Now through February the 29th, you can get a 60-month auto loan for as low as 2.25 annual percentage rate. Check out armcocu.com for other rates and terms. Apply for a loan online or visit us in person.
ARMCO Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back, good friends. It's a book talk day. We do it once a month here on the It's Your Turn program. And today, Karen Pierce is with us. Karen is the director of the Slippery Rock Community Library, where they have chosen the book Sometimes I Lie by Alice Feeney. Do you have a book club there at Slippery Rock? Was this one of the discussion books in your book club? Or?
This actually wasn't one of the ones that our book club discussed. We do have several book clubs at the library, but this was one where I'd seen it go through on our website at bcfls.org. Mm-hmm. There's a what we call a stream, and so when you pull that up, and you can see the books that are added in by each library, and they just come across the screen, and I saw that and I clicked on it and read the preview, and I thought, oh, that sounds pretty good, so I ordered it in, and I started reading it, and then Kathy reminded me that it was our turn to do It's Your Turn. It was our turn. And I thought, oh, let's do this book. So I try to find ones that you'll like, Dave, but I don't think I managed this time.
Well, no, that's just, first of all, it's only my opinion, for goodness sakes. This is a very popular book for book clubs, although I must say, as I looked at some of the reviews, there were many book clubs who weren't quite sure what happened either. So, hey, that's only my opinion. You know, you can't like everything. People would never believe you if you say you liked every book you read. So
that's true.
I try to be honest with people. I did admire this woman's writing style. In fact, I marked a couple of things that if we get a chance, I'll maybe read. I mean, I liked the way she wrote. I thought it's very good. It was just that the story was so convoluted and so complex that I did my best to follow it, but I couldn't. And then, you know, you get to the end and you know, is Amber really Amber, you know, or is it really Claire? I just wanted to throw up my hands and, you know, my head was spinning here.
Well, and then with all the additional tidbits, you know, there is a murder in the whole story, and there's
more than one murder.
Well, more than one murder. You're right. There's, you know, murders then, murders now. Then there's also the resolution to the conflict with Paul, and additional conflicts are brought in, and they're also slightly resolved.
There's also an ex-boyfriend of Amber. Name is Edward. He was a boyfriend several years ago when she first bumps into him on the street in London. Right after the producer at the radio show told her she had 1 week to make up to the Queen Bee, Madeline Foster. She was out of a job, and She went to a pub to get a drink, and she bumped into this ex-boyfriend from years ago, Edward.
Yes, Edward.
I forget Edward's last name, but that was him. And that was a sign of things to come, too.
Yes, yeah, he ended up being a big part of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when she goes into the hospital after this, what turns out to be an auto accident, and she's in a coma, he's working as a porter in the hospital. And the last time she knew him, he was a med student. I guess he didn't become a doctor. He must have flunked out of med school or something.
Although he tells her that he's a doctor.
Oh, well. I'm not a doctor, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
And, but so he leads her to believe that he became a doctor.
So is he among the visitors who stops into her hospital room whenever she's in this coma but can hear everything?
Yes. Yes, he is. And,
and her husband comes in all the time. Spends much of the day there. So what's the deal if they were having marital troubles? Why would he spend so much time there?
Well, I think that's one of the things that when she first wakes up, she's confused. She seems to recall that she's in the hospital because of something terrible that happened, and she can't remember why she's there. She's not sure whether she trusts her husband or her sister. She just remembers that somehow they might be involved, you know, with why she's there, but she couldn't remember all the details. So this whole time, you're also wondering, why are they involved? Are they to blame? You know, did they cause her to be there? You know, why? How are they involved? And it all unfolds, and it really unfolds very quickly. She's only in the hospital for about maybe a week. 2 weeks?
Yeah, a week or two, because then later in the novel she's out and starting to slowly regain her memory about what happened. She can also hear, and this is the very beginning of the book, when some of the doctors come into the room to, check on her, she begins to slowly realize she was in some sort of an automobile accident.
Yes, yes,
and in fact went through the windshield of the car.
She can hear them talking. I guess it's almost like a teaching hospital or something. There's a bunch of interns whatever those first-year doctors are. Mm-hmm. And, the doctor's sort of explaining things to them and explaining her case. And so that was, she marks time by counting seconds and listening for the nurses to come in, different nurses.
Well, there are some ominous things here, though, as she overhears these doctors who shouldn't have been talking in her presence to begin with, not knowing whether or not she could hear them. She can't speak, she can't move, but she can hear them. She hears them talking about the auto accident and so on, and something to the effect that she was driving her husband's car, and she's saying to herself, I never drive Paul's car. I never drive Paul's car. And then there's somebody else who says something about she wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and she went right through the windshield. And she says, she doesn't say out loud, but she thinks, I always wear a seatbelt. I always wear a seatbelt. So obviously some ominous signs there early on.
Well, and she also overhears the detectives coming in and talking to her husband, and they're saying,
what are the police doing there?
Are the police doing? And that's as she starts putting things together, like, okay, wait, things are not as they seem. So she's really trying to, and then she's also, she'll fall asleep, and as she comes to, she'll have these recollections, and she'll be like, there was a little girl involved, and I must have hit a little girl, or she just is very confused as to this accident. She often dreams that she's waking up in the rain, and so it was just, there were some neat parts in the story that really cause you to think, is this happening? Is this not happening? Is this part of, is this a hallucination?
There's also, she overhears the police, one of the police detectives, talking to her husband, you know, trying to figure out from him what happened. And they say, well, the doctors tell us that she had bruises and cuts on her body that predated the accident. You know, do you have any idea how that could have happened? And he, of course, says, no, don't know what you're talking about. But that's another ominous sign. And she hears this, you know.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm glad that she was able to hear it, because I think hearing those things triggered other memories that helped her get her memory back and get everything together. And then she has a visitor that comes in and sort of tells her everything.
Is that, well, her sister comes in, Claire.
Right.
Her sister comes in. In fact, she comes in, I think, when the husband is there, as I recall, for the first time. Yes, yes.
And she wasn't sure whether she trusted either one of them. You know, and
well, after hearing the doctors, I'm sure she wasn't.
And, you know, she's like, oh, they seem to be fussing with one another. Oh, they seem to have made up. Oh, you know, so as, because she's only privy to what's happening in her room. She doesn't know what conversations are taking place outside the room. And, at one point she thinks her parents come to visit.
There's also one of the flashbacks to the week before the accident. It's when she got the bad news about her job being on the line, and she went home early and found her sister Claire cozying up on the couch with her husband Paul, so she suspects that they're having an affair.
True, true.
Which would be pretty logical, I would think. They were obviously surprised when she popped in before she was expected.
And it goes along with some of the marital discord that she'd been feeling, and some of the other discoveries that she makes.
Okay, I can still follow this so far. I'm all right now. But there's a friend at work, at the job, that she talks about before this radio talk show, Coffee Morning, every day. They have a production meeting, which is typical, and there are producers and other people besides the Queen Bee, Madeline, the star of the show, and Amber. And one of them is Joe, who Amber talks about her as being her best friend. In fact, she even talks about, she bumps into Joe at the pub. And she tells her the story, and Joe says, "Oh, here's what you got to do, go out. Get some new clothes, buy a couple of new dresses, fix up your makeup, and head into work tomorrow. Madeline will never expect you're even going to be there, and here you are, bright and cheery in a new outfit and everything," which is what she does, by the way. She leaves the pub, goes out, buys some clothes, and that's when she goes home and finds Paul and Claire. But then I find out later that Joe might not even exist. It's an imaginary person, and that's when I started to throw up my hands and say, I don't know how much time I want to invest in this novel. How can you be writing about this, talking about this person, and then, you know, maybe she's imaginary. I mean, what the heck kind of a book is this?
Well, children have imaginary friends all the time. So sometimes as adults, when you're deeply stressed, you rely on different things to get you through.
Did you have an imaginary friend when you were a child?
I don't recall. I don't recall if I had one, but...
Do you know any adults? Now, seriously, really. Do you know any adults who have imaginary friends that they talk to? I don't know.
No. I don't know any adults that have imaginary friends. I occasionally will talk to myself, and I will occasionally even talk out loud to myself. But usually it's more like, where are my keys? Where are my keys? Where could I have left my keys? But I don't answer myself generally.
Well, I just found this, you know, totally unrealistic. Also, Amber, at least we think it's Amber. Maybe it's Claire. We're not sure. We get, even at the end, we're not sure. but she has obsessive compulsive disorder. And this figures prominently throughout the entire novel, actually.
True. That was one of those light bulbs I said, you know, earlier. I was like, oh, at the end of the book, when you realize, you're like, oh, of course. But yes, yeah, she checks the knobs on her stove several times. She checks the lock on her door several times. Before she leaves the house, she checks to make sure she has her keys, her phone, her purse, her
keys. And then after she does that, she goes back and does it again. Well, man, I just double check. Make sure all the knobs are turned off on the stove. Make sure all the doors are locked.
Yeah, she does it 3 or 4 times each time. Like, she has a whole ritual before she leaves the house. And I find that disconcerting myself because I'm generally running out the house hoping that I'm actually wearing 2 shoes that match.
Well, you know? Obsessive compulsive disorder is a real thing. There's no question about that. You know, there was a great TV series called Monk that was all about that. You know, the main character was obsessive compulsive. They treated it in sort of a humorous way, but it is a disorder that a lot of people deal with. I'm not quite sure that we needed that added in. In fact, there were a lot of things that I don't think needed to be added into this novel that made it so confusing and so convoluted that, you know, it was almost too much.
I agree. It was one of those clues that you didn't realize was a clue until the end. Then you're like, oh, of course. You know, she's trying to tell me that's, you know, how this was going to end, but I didn't get it.
Hey,
which is why I'm a librarian, not a detective.
I like my clues, you know, Professor Plum in the library with a lead pipe. Those are the clues that I like from the old clue game. I don't like a lot of this really complex stuff. Oh, yes, and then there is the bracelet.
Ooh, the bracelet. Yes.
Talk a little bit about that, Karen.
So
this is from childhood now.
Yeah, from when there was the two girls that ended up being best friends were born on the same day. And so the one little girl has a bracelet, and I don't remember exactly what it says, but it's like for my sunshine or for my darling or
no, it's got the birthday
something.
Card
and it has
it,
the birth date. And so the one girl steals it from the other girl and gets in big trouble for stealing it, but not immediately. You know, but she has this bracelet. She's borrowed it, and we're on radio, so you can't see my air quotes. But she's borrowed it, and she just loves wearing it. She wishes she had a nice family and loving parents and money.
So I'm getting like halfway through the book, and I'm trying to get invested in these characters, and then I find out that Claire is not really Amber's biological sister at all. She was adopted into the family after her parents died in a house fire.
I kept wondering throughout the whole story, the one girl is talking about her sister, her sister, her sister. But when you're reading the then chapters, she's an only child. And I kept thinking, when is this sister coming? When is this sister coming along? You know, where in the world is this sister? When is she going to be born or whatever? And then I realize, yeah, she's been adopted into the family later. So
talk a little bit about the author, Alice Feeney. As Karen mentioned, this novel revolves in part around the fact that the main character, Amber Reynolds, was a talk show host on a British radio show somewhere in England. It's not specified exactly. But that's what Alice Feeney did. She worked for the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, for quite a few years, actually. 15, 16 years, something like that.
I wondered as I was reading this whether she had a bad boss, whether Madeline Frost is someone whose name has been protected to protect the guilty or has been changed to protect the guilty, or if it's just a completely fictional character, whether all of Alice Feeney's bosses at the BBC were wonderful.
Could be. Who knows? She no longer works for the BBC. In fact, I think she's now a full-time writer because she's got a couple of books after this, I believe, right?
She has definitely one after this, I Know Who You Are, and that came out in 2019. And then she has a new one out coming end of April of 2020 called His and Hers. And they all fall into the psychological thriller suspense drama genre like this one.
She must be a pretty fast writer because this one, her first was published in 2018. So it's not all that long ago.
18, 19, and 20, yeah. I guess when you get on a roll, get them out while the story's good.
How she could come up with all these convoluted plots in that short amount of time. Who knows? I found a picture of her online, by the way, Alice Feeney.
Oh, she's pretty.
And it doesn't look like she's quite old enough to have spent, 15 plus years as a broadcaster and now is writing novels. Well, maybe. Maybe she started.
Or maybe that's an old picture.
Well, that could be, too. You never know. In this day and age, you never know. That's for sure. Let us take a break here. We'll be back, talk for a few more minutes with Karen Pierce from Slippery Rock Community Library, visiting with us on Book Talk here on the It's Your Turn program on this Monday. We'll be back right after these words.
Why pay more when you can get tobacco for less? Their store in Pullman Square Plaza includes a custom walk-in humidor stocked with a great variety of cigars and a 19-foot vape juice bar. Not to mention their Western Pennsylvania's largest glass emporium. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department supplies a wide selection of high-quality CBD products and is always adding to their product lines. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less, with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
In today's fast-paced world, our lives get a whole lot easier when we trust experts. We trust people who know what they're doing. And when it comes to shipping, I trust Going Postal Butler. They're right off Newcastle Road on Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's easy, too. I just cruise on back, go say hello to the friendly folks inside, and they package my items for shipping. And that saves me a whole lot of time from trying to wrap my item, trying to find the right size box or the bubble wrap or the mailing labels. With Going Postal Butler, I know they provide quality service. They've got great prices. Most importantly, they are trustworthy. So I know that my package will go where I need it to go. That's Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex, your friendly neighborhood shipping store, Going Postal Butler. During the break, Karen is trying to explain to me what really happened in this novel. I'm being very serious. I finished it and I couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. I had no idea. There are murders. There are Amber, if it's really Amber, tries to pin the whole thing on the queen bee, the boss, Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
Frames her. The bracelet appears again at the tail end, but then disappears. I don't know how that happened. It's like magic or something.
I thought it would be like the a cliffhanger for a second novel, but her second novel has different characters, so it wasn't. But I thought, well, it might be one of those things where she's able to go back and revisit the story at some point, because I really feel like Amber's story isn't over yet.
Good. I mentioned, even though I'm not a fan of unreliable narrators, in fact, if I don't read another one, that would be fine with me. But this woman, Alice Feeney, has a good way with words. Her writing is very descriptive. For example, she was describing, this was another writer that Amber and her husband had dinner with one time E.B. Wright. And she describes her trademark white bob frames her petite 80-year-old face. She's immaculate. Even her wrinkles are neatly arranged. Nice turn of a phrase. And there was another place where she was, I'll find that here in the book now. Describing a day. And she says, despite being a December afternoon, the sky is bright blue, the sun pushing its way through the scattered unborn clouds to create the illusion of a nice day against a backdrop of haze. And that's the way a lot of winter days are around here and in London as well. That's a nice turn of a phrase.
That is. It's nice and descriptive without being too much.
Mm-hmm. But too many characters, too many plot twists. And I hate getting to the end of a book and not really knowing what happens. You say you know.
I do.
Really? Can you guarantee that?
I can guarantee. I figured that because I sat down for a little bit like, wow. Okay, I did go back and reread a few chapters here and there, but yes, I got it at the end.
Is Amber really Amber, or is that a figment of somebody else's imagination, like Joe?
Amber is really Amber.
Okay, but by a different name.
Correct. She like. And do you have a middle name, Dave?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it would. She just switched names there. So her character really is. Should I give it away?
Why couldn't they tell me that in the beginning instead of waiting until the last page?
I know. It would have made things a whole lot simpler to keep track of.
Is there really a sister?
There really
is. Is there really a Claire?
There really is a Claire.
But she doesn't make it through to the end.
No, she's...
She's murdered.
She's murdered.
Who kills her?
Amber.
What a character. An adult with imaginary friends who uses somebody else's name.
And goes and kills people. And yet, at the end, you kind of, well, at the very end, I didn't like her. But throughout the whole book, you know, you kind of like her. Until the very end.
Well, whatever. As I told you before, I like the woman's writing style. Alice Feeney is her name, by the way. Feeney. I'm just not a fan of, the unreliable narrators. And that's very popular these days. It's very popular with book clubs. I know it is. In fact, you said you're reading another novel right now with an unreliable narrator.
I am. It's called The Elm Witch, or The Witch Elm. I'm slaughtering it, and I apologize to the author, whose name I can't recall right now either. But it's terrific. It actually takes place in Dublin, and there's a young man that's the protagonist, and he suffers an assault and a head injury, so he has memory issues, which again leads to a lot of confusion. So
I felt I was in the Twilight Zone when I finished reading this. You're too young to know that old TV show by Rod Serling, The Twilight Zone.
Rod Serling has an amazing backstory, though. You go ahead and look him up on, Wikipedia or Google for a real quick synopsis. He's an amazing character with a tremendous personal story.
I'll give you my copy. You can put it back in circulation in the library system.
Absolutely.
And tell our listeners where the Slippery Rock Community Library is located, characters.
We are in our new building at 465 North Main Street. We're just a little bit north of the elementary school in Slippery Rock.
And you're relatively new into that building, right?
We are. We moved in about in September, a year in September. So not quite a year and a half now. And oh, I love it. I still sometimes come in the morning and say to the girls, pinch me. I think I'm dreaming.
I saw some pictures on your website. Looks very nice.
Thank you.
It looks very nice. Karen Pierce, our guest. Karen is the director of the Slippery Rock Community Library. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Nice to talk about books with you.
I enjoyed today.
Yeah, I always do. Yeah. Okay, we'll take a break. Listen, we're going to talk about scholarships, college scholarships, how to find them, where they are, with our next guest, Gene O'Toole, who will be visiting with us via the telephone from New York City, New Jersey. So stick around. We'll be talking with her in just a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
How do you choose a funeral home? Reputation? The facility? A general feeling about the organization itself? Should you consider cremation? And of course, cost. I know you have many questions, so let Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler help you with some of the answers. We know our business and how to serve the Butler community. After all, we've been here for more than 90 years. A third generation of the same family is dedicated to this service. Thompson Miller provides complete services with dignity in the funeral home, at graveside, and for entombment. Thompson Miller is here to help you through the planning process with advice, counsel, experience, and compassion. Call us, and we'll help you make these important and sensitive decisions. 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, because we care.
Going to be talking, listeners, about getting money for college or higher education. Now, in the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Gene O'Toole. Gene joins us by telephone today. She is a scholarship strategist, author, and speaker. Gene, welcome. Nice to have you with us here today.
Dave, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You have been inspiring and helping high school and college students for, 15 years or so. It all started when you co-founded something called Connections 101. What was that, Gene?
Yeah, that's right. About 2008, so just over a decade ago, I co-founded an organization called Connections 101, which is based in New York City, but we actually provide resources and high school assemblies and programs for colleges, for schools all over the United States. And, you know, since our founding in 2008, we've had thousands and thousands of students attend our programs. We've been helping students, you know, uncover different scholarships and take a proactive role to scholarships. And students have won now anywhere from $20,000 to $200,000, putting our tools into place.
And you have now turned this into a book entitled Scholarship Strategies, Finding and Winning the Money That You Need. There's money out there, Gene, for scholarships. There's plenty of it.
Oh, my goodness. There are so many scholarships that, you know, unfortunately, families just don't know are there. I've become an expert in scholarships from private resources. So scholarships that are from companies, organizations, individuals, foundations. These are monies that, you know, if a scholarship, you know, if a student wins those monies, they're able to use those at any college that they're going to. So families really, you know, should, you know, do some research, you know, and we like to help them, you know, uncover these opportunities because they can stack those dollars on top of any monies that a college or university is being offered to that student.
This kind of flies in the face of the common perception, I would think, that scholarships are just for very talented top athletes or the very highest academic achievers or perhaps students with the greatest financial need. You say that's not necessarily the case.
Dave, I'm so glad that you brought that up because I'll tell you, I think that that is the biggest misconception that's out there. You know, families and students alike assume that the big money is going to go only to that student who has the best GPA or that student who is that star athlete or the families that have the deepest financial need. And of course, there are opportunities for those students, but there's also scholarships for every other student as long as they're on track to graduate. And I hope that pertains to any parent out there with a high school student. But it also, there's also this growing category, Dave, of scholarships that are actually called need blind scholarships, where financial need is actually not a piece of criteria whatsoever. And that company, that organization, that foundation, they've decided that they want to solely focus maybe on leadership or community service. And that means that there's really scholarships for everybody.
You recommend applying, Gene, first of all, for local and regional scholarships. Try that first, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is a numbers game, and we only have so much time on our calendar to devote to this, and I want families to use their time wisely. And one of the smartest things that families can do is to get as much information that they can about what scholarships are being offered just to students in their town or in their county or in their state. Because obviously those are scholarships where there's going to be fewer applicants, right? And we can, and if we can identify those particular opportunities, guess what? We have a better chance of winning those monies, as we're not going to be competing against students from across the country.
I'm guessing that it's a good idea to start early. I don't know. I'm a baby boomer, Gene, and in my day, you didn't really start thinking about this until you were a senior in high school. That's probably too late these days, huh?
Well, of course, there's scholarships for high school seniors. Definitely are, but there's also scholarships that are only for high school juniors. There's outside scholarships for kids in middle school. And even as early as elementary school. And you mentioned, Dave, that you're a boomer. Well, guess what? There's also outside scholarships, these private monies that are available, even for adult students. There's scholarships where you have to be over the age of 30 in order to apply. We even uncovered a scholarship this past year where the criteria was specific. You had to be over the age of 65 in order to apply. Mm. So there's really scholarships for everybody.
Well, that's news to me. I just figured it was only for, graduating high school seniors for the most part.
we have to always be reminded that, who are these scholarships from? Again, they're from companies, organizations, individuals, and foundations. And because it's private money, they get to decide who and what they want to honor. And, some companies want to specifically help maybe a younger student maybe get inspired, for example, to pursue science, And so maybe there's a scholarship that is just for younger kids who have an interest in science. Or maybe there's also scholarships, let's say, for that mom or that dad who is maybe looking to advance in their own career, and then maybe they need an additional certification of some type, or they want to change their careers. There's opportunities for everybody.
Are there places where, we're talking about scholarship strategies here with Gene O'Toole, are there places where parents and students can look? I mean, are there directories or somewhere where you could start finding out about these scholarships that are available?
Absolutely, yeah. So there's four places that we really can find scholarships. One is, of course, through, your school. Second would be through our family connections, like our relatives, any relatives that maybe work for a company that might have a scholarship for family members, or if you have any relatives who are part of a union, it's definitely worth checking into scholarship opportunities there. Third would be through book directories, and then fourth would, of course, be online. And we actually put together a list of a whole bunch of scholarship websites that can help people get started on their scholarship search. We have that, as well as a whole bunch of other free information at our site, connections101.com.
Our time begins to run short, Gene, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners are saying, wait a minute. Don't school guidance counselors know all about these scholarships? What's the deal on that?
I love school guidance counselors. I love college advisors. They're working so hard, and it's been my honor and privilege to meet so many of them over the course of my career. And they are working really hard for students out there. But I will tell you that, you know, if a family is only relying on the guidance counselor to share information with them, they're just going to miss out on opportunities, because although guidance offices do receive scholarship information in the mail, email, or fax over the course of any given month, there are still so many, literally hundreds of more opportunities out there. And so this is why I'm doing the work that I do. I highly encourage families to take a proactive role with regards to this. And because when they start to uncover and see, wow, there really are so many more opportunities that we can apply for and potentially win, it really can shift and change the overall college bill for a family.
You also had a note in your book, a reality check about the student loan deal. You say it's not really a deal. Public or private student loan companies make money by putting you in debt and then often keeping you there, right? So your advice is to pay those off just as quickly, as absolutely quickly as possible.
Yeah, you know, there's this misconception that the scholarship window of opportunity kind of ends when someone picks up a high school diploma, and you know, that's just not the case. Like, you know, like we just talked about, there are scholarships for students at any age and any stage of life. So if there are any families listening right now who have a son or daughter who's already in college, and maybe they were a student like I was. I was the first person in my family to go to college. We scrambled trying to find some scholarships, and we found some. I won some, but it wasn't enough, and I had to sit down and sign my name to student loans. I wish I knew then what I've come to learn now over my career. And if there's a student who had to sign their name to some student loans, they can and should be applying for outside scholarships while they are a current college student, and, you know, potentially be winning scholarship dollars while they are, you know, continuing with their degree every semester that they're in college, literally positioning themselves to pay off that student loan in advance. So they could walk off a college campus with the degree and zero student loan debt.
Gene, I'm sure our listeners, I know I can hear it's in your voice that you're very enthusiastic and passionate about this subject. The title of Gene O'Toole, J-E-A-N, O'Toole, title of our book is Scholarship Strategies, Finding and Winning the Money You Need. Thank you, Gene. You got some good tips here. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks so much, Dave. And I encourage all your listeners, you know, keep in touch with me. I would love to hear, you know, what scholarships you win, how much money you win, because your story will definitely help to inspire another family, you know, in the future. Stay in touch with me either at connections101.com or somebody can pop me a tweet at scholarshipgene.
Ah, that's terrific. Thanks again, Gene. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye, Dave.
We thank our earlier guest, Karen Pierce, the director of the Slippery Rock Community Library, visiting with us for a book talk session earlier on the program today. We have a good show coming up tomorrow. Our first guest tomorrow will be Jolynn Klaus. She is the principal at St. Gwendolyn Catholic School outside of Butler, out near Highland Golf Course. So we'll be talking with her. This is Catholic Schools Week. It's also National School Choice Week. We did a program a couple of weeks ago on school choice here on It's Your Turn. Tomorrow we'll learn a little bit more about St. Gwendolyn School with Jolynn Klaus. Also tomorrow, Matthew Kramer will join us from the Butler County Symphony Association. All of a sudden, it's time for the second half of the concert season for the Butler Symphony. And Matthew is the musical director and conductor, so we'll be chatting with him tomorrow as well. On the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Hope you can be with us tomorrow at 12:30 for It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.
Me.